Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Always good to play that game of catch up with you at the end of the week. I've missed a couple of my programs, been traveling around the country, participating in events. Lots to talk about. Want to start out, though, by reminding all of you that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And ever since the terror attacks of 9/11, I've been something of a man on a mission to educate, inform, perhaps prod the American people, our fellow Americans from across the country, to get them involved in their own government. We are in the mess that we're in because all too many of our fellow citizens are asleep at the switch, more concerned about who's going to win the World Series or the Super Bowl or Dancing with the Stars, and ignoring what's happening right here at home in our own country. And this is not about just the four border states' immigration, that is to say, but really this impacts every single state, and we're going to get into that. But before we do, I just want to remind everybody about a couple of very important websites that I hope you will all visit. First of all, my own personal website, Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. For many years, I have been associated with a terrific organization out in California, Santa Barbara, California is where they call home. A great place to be, especially in the winter, and the winter is going to be here before too very long, I'm afraid. Their wonderful website, capsweb.org, they have been hammering the myriad ways that the failures of the immigration system have hammered not only California. I know when people hear Californians, they think, well, I'm not from California, why should I care? The reality is that California has been that canary in the coal mine, so to speak. And really the issues that California confronts because of this disaster on the border, disaster where immigration enforcement is concerned, a created disaster, a man-made created disaster, I might say, administration politically created a disaster, is impacting all of us. Whether it's the economy, whether it's national security, whether it's public health, crime, narcotics, all of this is directly attributable to the willful neglect, the willful sabotaging, indeed, of any efforts, any semblance of efforts to actually secure America's borders and enforce America's immigration laws. And I got to tell you, I like to give credit where it's due. This administration flat out is the worst. There is no administration in the history of this country that has made a more concerted effort to undermine our borders, undermine immigration enforcement, deter illegal activity than this administration. But let me tell you, folks, the other party, the Republican Party, doesn't get off scot-free either. It was the Reagan administration who gave us the first amnesty, did not hire any more agents. Greatly increased the workload. We got into that mess where the solution, so-called, was amnesty. That mess was the direct result of a lack of resources to enforcing the law. So they created the disaster and then said, we'll fix it without hiring more agents, without deterring more illegal activity, but making it a crime to knowingly hire illegal aliens. Well, I agree with that part of the law. But without the manpower, without the commitment, without the agents on the ground, it's not going to happen. Man's laws are not like nature's laws. Nature's laws are immutable. The speed of light is not determined by a guy with a badge and a summons book. Our laws depend on those people who are out there enforcing the laws, the men and women of what I've come to call the Department of Homeland Surrender. But it's both sides of the aisle. But today, we really see what happens when we allow anarchy to rule supreme across America. We are now paying that price. So my mission, should all of us hopefully accept to take it, as they say in Mission Impossible, is to wake up. Wake up Americans, wake up our neighbors, get involved. Get involved. So please go to capsweb.org, their website. Is a treasure trove of information. I'm one of many people who write for them. Great articles. They sponsor commercials. They are very much into creating as much public awareness as possible. And so they have an important voice. They need your support, and I'd love for you to go to capsweb.org. Also, recently, within the past several months, I'm very proud to have become a columnist for the David Horowitz Freedom Center's terrific online magazine, Front Page Magazine. I've been writing for them. I just did a policy brief for Progressives for Immigration Reform. Was just down in Washington last week, in fact, presenting a talk based on that brief that I wrote for Progressives for Immigration Reform, PFIR. Go to the website. They will be shortly posting videos of the presentations made by a number of us who spoke down in Washington about the various aspects of the failures of the immigration system. Social Contract is there, another organization I write for. So I've been affiliated with many organizations, but by far the organization I've been affiliated with the longest for years now, Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. Visit the websites. I don't know if my friend Mark Hager is going to be able to join us this evening, but if he does, you're in for a treat. Mark right now is on his way home, and home for Mark is North Carolina. He's a history professor. He's also a close personal friend of mine and the force behind an important documentary that premiered yesterday in California, which is why he was actually out there. Tea Party Patriots produced an amazing documentary. The title of it, The Border States of America. Nick Searcy, the actor, was the narrator, did a lot of work on this film. I'm very proud to appear in this film, along with so many other people, border sheriffs and ranchers and people living along that Mexican border, Congressman Steve King, Congressman Gohmert, and Senator Jeff Sessions, my hero in the U.S. Senate. I don't think there's anybody in Washington who is more committed than these folks. With, and we have to throw in a couple of other names here so that we don't come up short. My good friend Lou Barletta from Pennsylvania, certainly Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa, David Vitter, the senator, also in the U.S. Senate. Again, a wonderful representative of the American people, defender of the Constitution, defender of our borders, our immigration laws. You know, for far too long, we have been lied to, bamboozled, intimidated, bullied by people who see in a takedown of our borders opportunities for profit, opportunities for profit. And it's got to stop. A country's borders are its first and last line of defense, not just America. Every country around the world recognizes that fundamental fact. If you can penetrate the borders of a country, you can do tremendous damage. And really, when you come to think about it, the mission of the U.S. military, and for militaries around the world, but in playing defense, the mission of our military is to keep the enemies of the United States as far from us as possible, as far from our borders as possible. And today we have unknown millions, I would argue tens of millions of illegal aliens living in towns and cities across this great nation. We have no way of knowing who they are. We have no way of knowing where they're from. We don't know anything about their backgrounds or their intentions. It is stunning to me, stunning beyond words, that in this post 9/11 era, where now there are concerns about ISIS and Khorasan and concerns about infectious diseases, and not just Ebola. I know Ebola is grabbing the headlines, and we do need to be concerned, but we're also looking at the enterovirus, which has killed some young children. You know, it's just remarkable that the accusations that we have to put up with for simply saying, let's secure the border, and we, as Americans, for the most part, have rolled over and played dead. We've allowed ourselves to be bullied. This is not the American way, folks. You know, Superman used to talk about truth, justice, and the American way. The American way is you don't mess with us, you know, kind of like the way we should live our lives. My goal is to be the best possible friend to my friends, and they know it. But my goal also is to be the worst nightmare to my enemies, and I suspect they know it also. Countries need to operate the same exact way. And this idea that somehow unless we throw open the doors to America and allow any of the billions of people who live around the world to simply strut right on in unimpeded, will somehow be an act of compassion, is lunacy. It's wonderful to give to charity, but you don't leave your doors open when you go on a trip. You know, that's crazy. What could possibly go wrong? And yet, this is what we keep hearing. Well, you know, you're not compassionate. You don't care about the young people. You don't care about the children. Why are those politicians, Chuckie Schumer, and all these others, you know, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, think of all these gangsters, the eight gangsters that were out there talking about, oh, the children, we have to have compassion. Why don't they talk about the failures of America to enable American kids to have this thin slice of the American dream? What happened there? What about the Americans? We keep hearing about the immigrants. I want to know about the Americans. And if you look at America's minority communities, the poverty, the violence, the drugs, the hopelessness, right here in America, one in four American kids go to bed hungry at night. Their families live below the poverty line. What about their dreams, their aspirations? Why doesn't that matter? How in the world can anyone be accused of lacking compassion for simply saying, let's take care of our own first? You know, when there's a tragedy and a car catches on fire or there's a building collapse and you see the parents race to that building, race to that car accident, race to that boat that capsizes, and who do they look to save first? Common sense tells you we save our own first. Have you ever in your life seen a parent pull a child, their own child, out of a burning building and have them criticized? My God, what in the world is wrong with you? You saved your own child first. Why didn't you save the neighbor's kids? Why didn't you save those strangers' children first? Does that make any sense to anybody? Is that reasonable to imagine that a parent, God forbid, finding out that their child was in a life or death situation, would rescue their own child first, be criticized for it? Of course not. Does that mean that if the opportunity presents itself that they won't drag another child out also? Of course they will. Doesn't it mean that if the opportunity is there for them, once they secure their own child, to run back into that situation and perhaps save other children? Absolutely. But first things first. Let's get our priorities in order. Americans are losing their own American dream. And you know what's so darn remarkable? If you dare use the word alien, they want to rip you a new tailpipe. They, the open borders anarchists, as I've come to call them. How dare you use the word alien as though it's the N-word. It's some derogatory term. Do you know that the word alien is a legal term and simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States? I defy anybody out there listening to my program to tell me where the insult is. How in the world is it insulting to say to somebody, you're not an American? Is that an insult? If I went to France and they said, hey, Mr. Cutler, you're a nice guy, but you're not French, they'd be right. I'd agree with them. And that's all that this means. So how in the world do you listen to the news on the major networks and listen to the propaganda, the lies, the BS? Listen to Nancy Pelosi and her nose is growing as though she needs any more enhancements to that mug of hers. The other day, in fact, Neil Cavuto, to his credit, replayed this. Other people did. Where a reporter asked her about illegal aliens. She kept saying, undocumented, undocumented. Well, you know what, Nancy? I doubt you're listening to my program because you certainly don't want to hear the truth because you know you're a liar. I mean, really and truly, you're many things, but I don't think you're stupid. And I certainly don't think that you believe the nonsense you're peddling. You just want to hopefully get Americans to believe your nonsense. The word undocumented should stop everybody cold in their tracks. That word undocumented gives me cause for pause, because what undocumented means is that we're talking about a person from another country and we have no way of knowing who they are. That's what undocumented means. They don't have a passport. They don't have reliable identity documents. That's undocumented. Now, in this day and age of terrorists attempting to cross international borders to carry out attacks, in this day and age where the 9/11 Commission, to which I provided testimony, speaks to this issue of how the terrorists use multiple false identities to conceal themselves and their movements, when someone says that person's undocumented, it means they either don't have or perhaps have but don't want you to see official identity documents so they can conceal their country of citizenship, their true name. With that goes criminal histories. With that goes affiliations potentially with terrorist organizations. Undocumented? You think it's innocuous? It would only be Jimmy Carter who could come up with that idea, because he was the one that issued those absurd orders that we could not use the term illegal alien to identify illegal aliens. And so you need to understand that this is where things stand with this business. So therein lies our problem. Understand the situation that we're dealing with. We're being told that somehow undocumented is supposed to mollify us, and if anything, it should really make it clear to us that this represents a threat to our safety. When I raised this issue, by the way, on an MSNBC debate with ACLU, La Raza, all the usual suspects, it didn't take 2 days that the spin machine got cranked up and they started to use the word unauthorized, because they know I was right. Just like the lie, we're fighting the terrorists over there so we don't have to fight them over here. Really? We're not fighting them here? What was the Patriot Act about? Where were the World Trade Center towers that crumbled to the ground? Where's the Pentagon? Where's Shanksville, Pennsylvania? But it's these lies. It's these lies. And then when people started to say, hey, we want the border made secure, Obama went to El Paso right across from Ciudad Juarez, arguably the most violent city in all of North America, all of the Western Hemisphere, besides North America. You'd be hard-pressed to find a hellhole anywhere else that's worse than Ciudad Juarez because of the cartel violence. And he said, oh, the Republicans. And by the way, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat, but I've always voted as an independent. I think both parties are the enemy of the American people. And the reason I'm still registered as a Democrat is I won't give up my vote in the primary. But goodness, he started making jokes about how, oh, those people want a moat and they want alligators in the moat. Really? The border is secure? Mark Hager, and in fact, I just got a text from Mark. He just landed in North Carolina. I'm hoping he'll be able to jump on the show with us in a little bit when he gets himself squared away. But Mark did a couple of previous films. I'm in one of those. And it still just did not sit right with him and other people in the Tea Party Patriots. And so at great expense, at great effort, they went down to that border. They dropped everything. They left their families, and they went down to a dangerous part of that border to film what's going on, to interview the sheriffs, to interview Border Patrol agents, to interview Senator Sessions, interview Congressman Gohmert, Louis Gohmert, Congressman Steve King. They had me fly down to Atlanta to do an interview with them as well for this film. I am so proud to be part of it. Because when you see the film, you will realize that you're being lied to on a daily basis. Let me tell you, so many of those Republicans who start out, well, first we're going to secure the border, when you hear it, run for your life. We are dealing with aliens coming into this country from the northern border. They're stowing away on ships, and they're arriving in international airports and ports of entry and then violating the terms of their admission. And when they talk about we're going to secure the border, if you look at the law, because I did, this is one of the things I like to do. I look at the law, and boy, oh boy, if you ever want to see a pile of nonsense, read some of these laws the way it's written. It's about as unwieldy as it gets. But they're talking about 90% operational control over the high traffic areas of the border. Does anybody even know what that means? Does anybody have any idea as to what this means? I mean, what in the world is 90% operational control mean? And high traffic areas? Who determines what's a high traffic area? That's not saying we're going to seal up the damn border. And that was why I wrote an article for front page magazine, and I called it Border Security and the Immigration Colander. And I said, you know, this entire focus, this laser focus on the Mexican border, the U.S.-Mexican border, saying that once we secure that, everything is fine, not even getting into what these clowns call securing it, 90% operational control. What's operational control mean? The verbiage is stunning. These people should be selling used cars without an engine in them, you know, or a three-legged racehorse. But it's worse than that because we've been giving political asylum and citizenship to terrorists. Think about that. And I'm a big fan of political asylum. My grandmother died in the Holocaust. I'm Jewish. It was a privilege. And I was an inspector at Kennedy Airport at the beginning of my career to admit political refugees into the United States so they could get away from the regimes where they were suffering all sorts of issues, starting with persecution and going downhill from there quickly. But the 9/11 Commission was very clear. They came to recognize that terrorists, including this guy Cansey, who shoots up the CIA in 93, kills two CIA officers, wounds three others, this guy applied for asylum, lied through his teeth, and repaid our kindness by killing our people. A month later, first attack at the Trade Center, Ramzi Youssef was granted political asylum from the Middle East, lied on his application, and then we get to the Tsarnaev brothers, the Boston Marathon attack last year. Again, granted political asylum, and they lied. And I can go through more examples of this. So we're being magically told that if we could just secure that Mexican border, all these other problems go away. And I said, listen, that's like saying that if you partially plug a hole in the bottom of a colander, just one out of how many, that now you can safely use that colander as a bucket to carry water. And I went on and said, now imagine if sometimes you're not carrying something as innocuous as water, but a deadly fluid, deadly liquid. So if it leaks out, there's hell to pay. Well, think about aliens with dangerous diseases. Think about terrorists. Think about the transnational gangs and criminals and narcotics traffickers. Think about the fugitives from justice of other countries. People wanted for war crimes, atrocities. People wanted for murder, rape. That's who we're supposed to keep out. The law has nothing. Our immigration laws have nothing to do with race or religion. It's lie after lie, falsehood after falsehood. People like Ted Cruz go out there, and everyone is raving, oh, if only Ted was the president. If only Ted was the president? Really? You know, Silicon Valley just laid off 18,000 computer programmers, Americans. Americans who are well-trained, Americans who have the skills, Americans who have the experience. They were fired, canned, told to go home, can't pay their mortgages. But meanwhile, Ted Cruz wants to bring in 500% more high-tech foreign workers. Why? Why not get Americans into those jobs? Zuckerberg from Facebook had this thing called the hackathon, where he and other executives from Silicon Valley would take young people under their wing and teach them how to write computer code. Could you imagine what an amazing opportunity that is to be a young person, to be mentored by people like Zuckerberg, who created Facebook and all these other brilliant minds, supposedly. Although when you look at the lawsuit that Zuckerberg had, I'm not so sure what he stole and what was his, but that's a story for another day. Maybe he did it. I'll give him that. But certainly he knows how to write code. Here's a guy making this amazing offer and saying, I'll take you under my wing. Oh, by the way, you know what the prerequisite is to have the best and brightest tutor young people? The young people had to be other than American citizens. They had to be aliens, and they had to be illegally present in the United States. Stop and think. Stop and think. Think of American children living in buildings that are so disastrous that there's no heat in the wintertime. Rats run through the building. The stench of poverty, as one of my former colleagues at INS stayed in your nostrils for weeks when you went into these buildings. I mean, I can't even tell you what it smelled like. I really can't begin to describe it to you. Where these kids go to bed at night and they wake up with bed bugs and roaches climbing over them. This isn't conjecture. I didn't read it somewhere. I was in those damn buildings many, many, many times, and I hated it every time I went in there. Every time I went in there, I felt as though I was walking through the doorway to hell. And I was just there for a couple of hours to conduct an interview or make an arrest. Imagine the people that call that hellhole home. Imagine going to bed hungry at night. Imagine bullets whizzing outside your window. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. If you were 15, 16, 17 years old, living under those circumstances, my question isn't what would you be willing to do to get out of that kind of poverty. My question is, what wouldn't you be willing to do? What would you not be willing to do? And you know, I'm kind of a liberal guy. I actually agree with a $15 an hour minimum wage, and I know there are people that disagree with me, and you're entitled to your opinion, and I'm an American, so I'm entitled to mine. And we can agree to disagree. And it's time we as Americans learned how to do that, by the way. And that doesn't make you my enemy if I disagree with you. It just makes me an American with a different viewpoint. But do you really believe that $15 an hour will enable anybody to climb out of poverty? You see, you've got the president demagoguing the issue. Oh, those nasty Republicans, they don't want you to have that $15 an hour minimum wage. I'm looking out for you. I want $10.10 federal, and we're going to get it up to $15. Okay, then what? Could you people who are listening to my program imagine trying to live on $15 an hour? And please don't tell me this is a starter salary for children. It's a minimum wage, and when you go to McDonald's, and I've been all over this damn country, I see lots of adults working in McDonald's today, folks. These were the people who used to be the computer programmers and the engineers who can't find jobs in many cases. So let's cut through the nonsense. And, you know, to tell people, well, it's a starter job, you have got to pay people enough money that when they get up in the morning and set that alarm clock, that they can justify setting that clock to go to that job. And let's say it is $15 an hour. How in the world do you live on $15 an hour, especially if you have a family? How many hours a day do you need to work? There aren't enough hours in the day even if you don't sleep. So what we're being told is it's an act of compassion to give $15 an hour to the lowest paid workers. And then Alan Greenspan comes along in 2009 when he testified for Chuckie Schumer, and he said that we've created a privileged elite. That's what he refers to Americans who have skills in education, and claim that this privileged elite, so-called, were earning a wage premium because they're not being made to compete with foreign workers for their jobs. Because in his opinion, if you could get Americans to compete with foreign workers, you could cut that wage premium so we could reduce wage inequality. And right now, that's the big bandwagon, right? You turn on all these great programs, and the comedians are making jokes. John Oliver, the Brit, who's over, I think, on HBO, you know, this week tonight or last week tonight or whatever that silly show is, and he thinks he's doing a spoof and a parody. And he spent half of his 30-minute program about a month or two ago talking about the billionaires and about wage equality. So the logical conclusion you came to listening to his claptrap was, well, this is about making certain that middle-class workers do better. And that's not true. You see, we all look before we get on an elevator, at least most of us do, to see which way the arrow is pointing. Is the elevator going in the direction we want to go? And if we can't see it, you know, I'm sure we've all been there, get on the elevator, and some guy keeps opening the door. Going up or going down? Which way are we going? Everybody wants to know, are we going up or going down? People are jumping on this wage equality elevator and not bothering to ask, is that elevator going up or is it going down? The elevator, folks, is going down. What wage equality really means, believe it or not, is to decrease the difference, the gap, that separates the middle class from the poor, primarily by eliminating that wage premium. I'd like to know what part of someone's middle class salary is the premium part. Yet Greenspan used that terminology. Astonishing. Well, look at this. I see my friend Mark Hager is on board. Let's bring him on. Well, hopefully. Mark Hager.
Yes.
There you am. Welcome home back to North Carolina, Mark. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I'm trying to be back in North Carolina. I'm trying to remember how you know how that goes.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. But how was your trip?
It's a lot of flying, and of course we're only out there for, you know, one full day for the event, which was last night. But it was sensational. Had people cheering, lots of applause at the result of the Border States of America, and that judging from what we saw there and from the comments, and that I wouldn't see any reason why this thing doesn't make it into a much, much larger national spotlight, wouldn't you think?
I would think so. I have to tell you how privileged and honored I am that you included me in this amazing film.
Well, you had to be. I mean, it wasn't really a choice. It was just how to do the logistics to meet the time and the funding to be able to find a spot where they could get the camera set up so that we could fill in that piece that has to be done. So that was the hardest hurdle to try to figure out.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, I watched that film, and I could not be more proud. And you know, my friend Chris Burgaud, who's also a movie producer, put me in the very first documentary that I was ever in, and he did a documentary about the border also. Emailed me this morning, you might be interested to know, Mark. And Mark was
all right,
the force behind this film, and said he thought it was the best I've ever done, and thought that Luke, the guy who interviewed me, nailed it. And Luke did an
yeah,
amazing job. If I look good on the film, it's not me, it's special effects.
No, I mean, Luke, I have to leave it to Luke and Ground Floor Video Production to knew how to get the camera and the angles right. But to me, I'm just making sure the right personalities are there and that the story makes sense and that it's linked correctly and that the information in it is undeniable. And so that when you finish, the public won't be able to do anything but say, you know, what a mess the situation is. And then plus, the way the documentary ends, it actually explains, you know, there are ways we can fix this situation, and we spell it out. And, you know, we put a battle cry out to the public, say, you know, we've done this, we put it together, we've explained it, we put it in details for you in bits that's understandable.
Yep.
Now it's in your hands, it's in your court.
Well, you know, I don't believe that anybody can truly be a responsible parent without being involved in politics. Now, you know, and here's my point. You tell me what you think, Mark. Responsible mm-hmm. parents do everything they can for their children. And, you know, I just became a grandfather as this past Monday, which is blowing my mind all over the place. It's amazing to pick up my granddaughter. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I can't even tell you. My goosebumps had goosebumps holding my granddaughter for the first time. What an experience.
I hope I don't have to do that yet.
Not yet. You have a while to go yet. But the day will come. But I have more gray hair than you do, so that explains some of it, I think. But
I don't
you know,
have hair.
Yes, you do. What you do have is less gray than mine. But, you know, really, all joking aside, as responsible parents, we nurture our children. We teach them how to stay safe. We make sure we provide them with a safe, wholesome environment at home, great meals, a good education, moral values. We emphasize education. You're a history professor. That certainly goes without saying in your case. And very often we spend a ton of money educating our kids. But if at the end of the day our own government encourages foreign workers to replace American workers, if at the end of the day our government, through failures to secure the borders, permit aliens with dangerous diseases, not just the Ebola virus, think about the enterovirus, those children who've died, more children sickened, some have become paralyzed apparently. I'm not saying it definitely came across the border, but I find the timing remarkable that this thing seemed to have taken off around the time that we witnessed this influx of tens of thousands of unaccompanied minors from Latin America, and the administration, this transparent administration that thinks that you make windows out of lead-lined bricks, apparently, sent them off to cities all around the United States and refused to let anybody have access to the facilities or tell them who was going where, remarkably. So if this is what happens because of your own government, and then if you have politicians who keep trying to bring in more high-tech workers, whether it's Ted Cruz looking for that 500% increase in the H-1Bs, or Chuck Schumer, and I don't even know where to begin or end with that cretin. There's a bunch of these folks. I mean, I don't mince words. This is too damn important, folks. This is about our future, our children and our grandchildren's future that we're talking about. So, I've had it with being polite. The gloves are off. But as parents and grandparents, isn't this our responsibility to make certain that we get rid of these politicians who don't stand with America and Americans?
Well, I can tell you for a fact, as of yesterday evening, that more people were apprehended along the border from West Africa. Of course, and they had the same standard, put some yellow tape up, stay 6 feet away from them, put a mask on them, and that's their quarantine.
Gee whiz. What could possibly go wrong?
But, as long as politicians are too busy trying to make the meetings with other lobbyists who are going to put money into their hands, and the corporate need for cheap labor, which forces everything to get even worse upon us, and at the same time, the realization that our border is not just insecure, but as more and more people, as the documentary showed, continue to move out of those cities, well, then they have least resources to fund more local enforcement. So thereby you have sheriffs that are reduced to maybe four, maybe six deputies max, with limited resources on their own, with 2,000 square miles of area to cover. And what could possibly go wrong with that?
And I remember you interviewed one sheriff from one town who said that because everybody left, the amount of revenue they had coming in was dwindling, and it was, what was it, three people, I believe, covering an area like the size of Connecticut or something crazy like that?
They had four deputies, and the most that they could do was put one on a shift to cover, that was, I think, 930 square miles.
My God.
That same county has recovered 434 bodies, I believe, to date within the last few years of people who died after they came in. That's just one county. I mean, that's the thing the documentary showed, is that, this is, okay, you can go to any county.
Well, you've made two prior trips to film. Did you get a sense, if you had to compare what you saw the first, the second, and the third time, do you see a trend? And if so, is it better, worse? How would you, from what you saw, how would you evaluate it, Mark?
My evaluation on it was, the first two were primarily, the first one especially was dealing with the Tucson sector, with Sheriff Larry Deaver in Cochise County, Arizona, and the impact of the Sinaloa cartel and documentation that shows that other people are coming in, OTMs in that area, which was well known, and Angel Brian Terry's death and Nicholas Ivey and a host of others that were killed there, not in residents, such as the Krentz family and others that were made at least some press within
right.
it. But when you look, the second one, we tried with a two-string budget, as you can remember, it was to try to bring this out and show how cartel operations that start there, they set up in every town, every community, USA, and to further human smuggling, drug trafficking than anybody else with anything but good intentions for the U.S. would be utilizing that same system too. But it was hard on such a budget. But this one, it's much more comprehensive in that we decided to cover the entire length of the Tex-Mex border and show how not only is it not secure, I mean, it's so laughable, as you saw in some areas. There's no one there. There may be a fence there, but there's no one there watching it, and it's got holes all through it. And then you tried to say, well, where are all these people going? And then there's Mike Cutler explaining DACA, as we alluded to at the beginning, and then you nailed it into place as to the government is doing the final legs of the journey for whatever group that wants to get into the U.S.
By the way, just to cut you off just for 1 sec, DACA, for those of you that aren't familiar, is the Deferred Action Alleged Childhood Arrival. They can be up to age 31 and claim they got here before their 15th or 16th birthday. But, again, think of the restrictions on the adjudicator, okay? No interview, no capacity to order an outside field investigation, and they'd like them to process the application in under 30 minutes for somebody who will simply say what they know they need to say in order to qualify. Just like that guy that got on the airplane with the Ebola virus and lied about having been in contact with somebody who was suffering from the Ebola virus. So all it takes is a lie, and you're in.
Yep. And these people aren't the people that we're raised with, you know, as an American citizen. The people, when you look at the drug cartels, their operations, say, with their children, so-called children, down in Hidalgo County, which even more are still coming in, but that's another story. But they could send them right across the bridge. And because, you know, they're feeding the lies that they're going to get amnesty, which maybe isn't so far out of the stretch anyway, but they could walk them across the bridge. But no, they say, you'll go across the Rio Grande right here. So they end up pulling some bodies here and there with the sheriff's offices, and all your enforcement diverges over to the Rio Grande. And at that point, with the limited resources, you got human smuggling, you got black tar heroin, you got methamphetamine. Anything you can think of goes the other direction. And the money.
And by the way, and think of the proceeds from that, folks. Think where the money's going.
Billions upon
billions. I'm going to start sounding like Carl Sagan pretty soon. But tens of billions of dollars going right into the bank accounts of the Mexican cartels and, in some cases, terrorist organizations. Heroin that comes from the Middle East is going right back into the Taliban, going right back into ISIS eventually. We're making it easy for them to get their hands on the money because of the drug trade. And you almost never see commercials about the drugs. Isn't that remarkable? They worry about salt and sugar because the drug money is flowing also through the banking industry of the United States, Wall Street, real estate, high-end auto sales, high-end jewelry. And I'm sure I'd like a dollar. How's this, Mark? A dollar for every $1,000 that goes into campaign coffers that originated in criminal activity. How many dollars do you think I'd have? How scary is that thought?
Well, I mean, as we know, when you look at Wachovia in the past, with going to $374 billion that was money laundered to Mexican cartels before Wells Fargo bought them. But, and then the other angle on that, it's just a misery on the people used as pawns. I mean, you're just a drug if you're from Honduras. So they know that if you get caught, they'll be released right back. They come back in again and have to pay cartels $2,000 they can to get a shuffle drugs in. And then when they finally get it paid off, they give them a jug of water and look at the vast open mess of an area of west of parts of Texas and say, just over that area is Dallas. And then bodies of men, women, kids, you name it, are found. They'll still be found for years across
area. And meanwhile, in places like New York, we're being told, well, if you have a firearm permit in that unlikely possibility, then you can only put seven bullets in that magazine because we're worried about violence. Really? You think bank robbers, crazy people, or terrorists are sitting there counting how many rounds they're putting in their guns? If you want to go after the violence, go after the gangs, go after the drugs.
Yeah.
That's how you go after the violence. But what do we know? You know, we're just troublemakers stirring the pot, Mark, and I'm proud to be a troublemaker in that situation.
Well, you know, the sheriff down there said, you know, why doesn't the government want to come down there and do a comprehensive border search like we did and compare it from one end to the other? And it's not funny, but I said, well, maybe we can get them to contract to us, and we'll go ahead and do it all for them. We'll tell them what's happening from one end to the other.
Well, see, I think it's different. I'm more cynical than that. I believe the government knows damn well what's going on and wants the status quo. Chuck Schumer, and I'm going to be writing an article about this. You're going to love this because I went after Bloomberg for the same issue. Chucky, baby, was ranting and raving about how these people have trespassed on the Manhattan, on the Brooklyn Bridge. And, you know, we drove over the Brooklyn Bridge. And you remember when the flag got taken down and they put up a big white flag instead of the red, white, and blue? So Schumer went nuts, and then you had these kids climbing the top of the of what was supposed to be the Freedom Tower, the replacement for the World Trade Center. And he said, oh, these people are trespassing. That's a danger. And if you want to stop it, guess what you have to do, according to Chucky Baby? You have to have harsher laws and enforce them vigorously to deter them. Wow. I wonder what would happen if that was done along the border to deal with aliens who were trespassing.
Yeah,
see, they understand. Schumer's not stupid. I mean, I understand that he got a perfect score on his SAT. One of my buddies had the misfortune of attending high school with him. And he said he was the most arrogant know-it-all that he had ever met. And I said, well, certain things don't change, I guess, except he's gotten older and uglier. But here's the guy who clearly understands the issue. Because he said, look, the way you stop people from trespassing is put up barricades, and come up with tougher laws, which he's proposing, tougher penalties, and enforce the law to the letter. What do you think would happen if we tried that along the border, Mark?
Well, the president himself, when he was a senator, as well as Joe Biden, actually didn't vote present. They voted for 736 miles of double-layered fencing, and in the end result, only put 36 miles up.
Yes, because maybe Biden's worried that his son would have problems getting his cocaine. You know, he was just dumped out of the military academy.
I saw that on the.
I guess they went after him for flying without an airplane.
You know, those are the things that I think the public will take away from when they watch the Border States of America. Because using your own terms and wisdom, you know, we are all border states now. There is no such thing as a non-border state.
That's right. I got to tell you, it gave me goosebumps when I saw that in the title. I thought, oh my goodness gracious, now I've infected other people's minds with my ideas.
Yeah, the only thing is we're going to have to make another one, and the way things are digressing across the border, and call it the Border Counties of America.
Well, I would love if you could ever put the money together, maybe if there's enough folks out there that want to do this, I'd love to work with you on interior enforcement because, you know, if you want to think about baseball, enforcing the laws from within the interior is kind of like what the outfielders do at the baseball game. If someone is able to hit that ball over the infielder's heads, you need people in the outfield who could shag that ball and stop it. Because if you took
That's
the outfielders out of the game, anybody who could hit the head over the infielder's heads gets an in-the-park home run. Today, anybody who gets admitted into the United States by that inspector at a port of entry or manages to evade the Border Patrol enough times, I mean, they can get arrested 5, 6, 7 times, doesn't matter, as long as they make it across on that last attempt, they're home free. And it's not unlike playing baseball without the outfield. So we need to make sure we have effective, left field, right field, and center field players out there, making certain that nothing gets past us. And that's really so critically important that it's being ignored by everybody, isn't it? Or almost everybody.
Yeah, and all the overstate visas and the lack of enough resources and boots on the ground to adequately go after them.
And the fraud, the people that lie on their applications. And, you know, by the way, here's something interesting that dawned on me. You know, now they're making a big deal that they're enhancing the screening of people from the countries where Ebola is an issue. Well, we're going to get their email addresses, and we're going to get their phone numbers and contact information. And I'm sitting here thinking, my gosh, why in the world aren't we requiring this of every foreign national who enters the United States? When our embassy was overrun in Tehran back in the 70s, when Jimmy Carter was the president, we were tasked with going out and looking for those Iranian students who were demonstrating in Washington, and there were concerns that there might be some terrorists among them, or at least spies or other people who meant us harm. And let me tell you, we couldn't find most of them because we pulled up their arrival records. They weren't even computerized then, at least now they are, but it doesn't matter. Because typically, the inspectors would be putting things in those documents like hotel in New York, hotel in Wisconsin. Where do you begin with those? Wow, a hotel in New York. I know exactly where I want to go. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, we're living in a dangerous era. We keep expanding the visa waiver country, violating the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. Why in the world aren't we requiring the sort of detailed information about every foreign national who sets foot inside the United States? Obviously, the government doesn't care. Yeah, but see, the point is, we understand that the American people need to understand the way that our government's incompetence, and I call it planned incompetence, is imperiling our safety.
Yep, and the mindset of America that for many of them, if they don't see it like exploding in front of them, then they don't seem to care, and they would rather wait until that point, which may be too late.
And that's right. That's
the
right.
Other angle.
Well, I really hope that we can do a sequel to this and look at where what happens when we get away from the border. I really think
that would be an eye-opener.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. I'd like to do that.
Well, it's up to the folks out there. You know, I don't want to make this sound like a telethon, but really, folks, go to watch this film. Go to Tea Party Patriots, the border states of America. There's a place where you can make a contribution. This isn't about raising money. And I have to tell you, I was so impressed that you guys did this for free, asking voluntarily for people to provide contributions. Most people, when they do films, do it with the idea of the profit motive. This was purely an act of love of America that you and your colleagues at the Tea Party Patriots did for all Americans. I don't even know how to begin to thank you, Mark, for the hard work, the long hours. This wasn't an easy trek for any of you.
2,800 miles just
but who's counting?
The border.
But who's counting? And he walked them all barefoot.
And Nick Thirsty, actor that came in to narrate it.
Did he do an amazing job or what? That was
job, but he could have charged a whole lot until he looked at the script, and he felt it was too important to waste time on this and dedicated time to do what he did, and wait till you see how well he did it. And so, like you said, though, Mike, if we want to continue to get this out to the public, yes, we did get it out free to the public, but it sure wasn't free. I mean, this was a six-figure effort to do it, and so if people could go to Tea Party Patriots and show their support. I mean, I would encourage them to contact Tea Party Patriots National Support Team online and tell them, you know, we want to help, we want to donate, but we don't want it to stop here. We want let's bring it up to the next level, and they'll react, and the funds that come in, if they're earmarked that way, that's where they're heading.
Well, you know, we know that the mainstream media is being scoffed at by anybody who has a pulse. We know that we're being lied to by most of the so-called news programs. The alternative is for Americans to do what you and your team did, Mark, and that's to go out there. You know, I want everyone out there to think of something. You know, when they do public speaking events, and by the way, if any of you folks out there become aware of opportunities for public events, let me know. I'm going to be in Pennsylvania next Friday. In fact, I will not be doing my show next Friday night. Once again, I'm going to be taking a leave. I'll be on absence because I'm going to be in Pennsylvania at an event with the Tea Party in Lehigh Valley. But if you become aware of opportunities for public speaking events, please let me know. I love getting out there. But here's my point. If you think about it, how often have any of you out there actually witnessed a newsworthy event? Mostly the newsworthy events are events that we become aware of because of the media. And if the media doesn't report on it, there's no way of knowing about it. You know, it's not the old question, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, does it make a sound? The question is, if nobody reports on it, does anybody know that the tree fell in the first place? So for Mark and his team to go down to the border, I can't even imagine how difficult it was to leave the family, leave your work behind and so forth, and go down to the border, drop everything, and produce a film that's of such amazing quality. I mean, this is really a professionally done film, and show Americans so that there's no doubt anymore. You know, I keep thinking about Obama making those wisecrack remarks, oh, well, these people won't be happy till we have a moat with alligators. Well, let me tell you, yeah, a third strand of barbed wire would be an improvement over what's there right now, folks. I mean, this is the way you're going to know what the truth is. And then the trick is to take what you learned from films like this one and confront the liars who claim to be representing you. Imagine if you hired a contractor and said, I want a white picket fence put around my house. And you went on vacation, and the kind of work they did is what they've done on the border, and the guy had the chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn, to mail you the bill. How quick would you be to pay it? Well, that's what they're doing, and this situation is about protecting the lives of Americans, your families, your children, your grandchildren. Their futures are on the line. We want to arm you with the information. So when that politician stands there spewing lies, you could say to this guy, hey, listen, pal, I'm not as dumb as you hoped I am. Here's a film for you to watch, and hand him that DVD and tell him he could watch it or put it in a safe place where it won't see the light of day from now on. Because film, am I right or wrong, Mark?
Oh, no, you're right, and I have to go. I still got people to call that I'm back in North Carolina, but I just encourage people to listen to you and go to BorderStatesOfAmerica.com, watch it for free, invite family and friends, everybody you can, have a house party inside your house and just say, don't say anything, just watch this and let's talk about it when it's over.
And, Mark, I want to thank you after this long schlep that you had all the way across this country to get on the radio with me tonight. I can't tell you how much I so appreciate it. I appreciate all of this, Mark. By the way, I haven't gotten my DVDs yet. Kick Greg for me.
They're coming.
I know. But look, what's important is it's so easy to get to see it online, folks. It couldn't be easier. Yeah. Take out your computer, go to Tea Party Patriots, go to the film The Border States of America, and there it is right on your computer. And that's where we're at. Mark, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to stay on for a little bit, folks. So stay with me. But Mark Hager, thank you so much, and thank you for the service that you're rendering America. I consider it a privilege to call you a friend.
Well, I consider it likewise, and all thanks goes to you. You were actually out there in the trenches as a law enforcement agent for the United States for almost half a century. Sort of.
Thank you for reminding
years.
Me.
Well,
if I didn't feel old before,
that.
I do now.
but you take care, stay safe out there, and just keep doing what you're doing, and hope people will stop and say, you know, let's watch this thing. Let's just watch it. And
it's a 1 hour. It's not even a full hour, and it's an amazing film, and you will walk away so much smarter than when you started. Really, folks, I mean that sincerely. You did a great job. By the way, if you do have contact with Nick Searcy, tell him how much I appreciate it. I'd love to have a conversation with him at some point.
Okay.
Go home and
have
a safe evening, and tell your family I say hi, Mark.
Okay, well, thank you, and you all have a good evening.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was Mark Hager, the force behind The Border States of America. Important film, folks, really and truly. Take out that hour, sit down with your family, bring your friends over, you know, have some hot dogs, popcorn, whatever you want to do. But knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. If you're complaining that the newspapers aren't giving you the truth, if you're tired of listening to the same old nonsense on TV where they're more concerned with a squirrel that ran after a cat rather than tell you what's really going on with your own country, all that fluff, This film has no fluff, I guarantee you. It's 100% hard-hitting, fact-filled, unbelievable. I mean, Mark did such an incredible job. I really want all of you to make a commitment, not to me, obviously, but to yourself, to your children, to your children, to your grandchildren, that you're going to watch that film this weekend. Don't put it off, because then we start to forget, oh, yeah, I was supposed to do it and I didn't get to do it. No. Folks, this weekend, sit down for that hour. Sit down for that hour. Watch the film. Watch the film. And then you can reach me through michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org. Let me know what you think. Contact Tea Party Patriots. And I don't care whether you're a member of the Tea Party or not. And I want to dispel another myth, too. Being a kid from Brooklyn, so many of my Democrat friends have all these derisive things to say, oh, the Tea Party. Well, let me tell you something about the Tea Party. They have a special place in my heart. And I wasn't sure what to make of them either in the beginning. I felt, well, they're a vote for none of the above. When they started speaking at some of their events, I was in Texas with them for July 4th weekend almost 10 years ago. But for the last 3 years, the Tea Party has had a convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and I've been invited to speak. And not at 3 o'clock in the morning when there's four people in the room, but prime time, generally right after the elected representatives speak. The first year I spoke right after Newt Gingrich spoke, and they gave me 25 minutes, full room, you know, packed. And they know that I'm registered as a Democrat. They know that I don't agree with them on every issue, but they do know that I take being an American very seriously. They could not have been warmer towards me, more respectful, more encouraging. When I got done, the number of times I was interrupted by a standing ovation, it blew my mind. This divisive nonsense, folks, has got to stop. It's the enemies of America that wants us divided. It's the enemies of America, the profiteers. I call them the fences, the people that are selling that which isn't theirs, the future of our country and the future of our kids and their children. They're the ones who want us divided at each other's throats. If we get together as Americans, I assure you, that we will find at the end of the day that there is far more that unites us than divides us. And when we disagree, that's fine. You don't have to agree with me on everything. As Americans, that's our birthright, the right to disagree. That's why the Founding Fathers talked about the right of peaceable assemblage. Because what they were saying is, hey, listen, have the arguments. You can scream and yell at each other. Just, you know, leave the guns, the knives, and the clubs out of the fight. Use your words, you know, as we tell young children that are learning to speak. Use your words. Don't let it get violent. Don't let it get out of hand. But have those arguments. Have those debates. And you'd be amazed. Sometimes you think you understood an issue, and having to listen to your opponent might help you to see things differently. Or it may cause you to become more convinced than ever before that you're right, which is fine. Either outcome is wonderful. There is nothing like a good debate. I was on the debating teams in high school and college. My degree is in communications, arts, and sciences. My original plan before I became a federal agent was to teach speech and debate on the college level. Personally, I don't think anybody should get a high school diploma or a college degree without a full year on the debating team. It's the only place where you're taught how to ask the questions, not just answer the questions. So have those debates, but let's base the debates on fact, on fact. And I can tell you, if you want the facts about America's borders and the impact that this has on all of America, then you absolutely have got to watch the border states of America. To call it eye-opening does not do it justice. The quality of the work, the amount of time and effort that went into it, folks, this was a labor of love. This truly was a labor of love. And I'd like all of you to take that hour to sit down. It's free, although as we talked about it, if you can make contributions, please do, because I would like to work with Mark on a sequel. But watch the film. Pass it along to your friends. Even if they disagree, even if they don't want to hear it, tell them, look, okay, why don't you just watch this and see what's really going on? Because this is not what you're going to see on television. This is not what you're going to see in most of the newspapers. These guys went down there with their cameras, and they filmed. And they interviewed the border sheriffs, and they interviewed the people who live down there. We live in a dangerous time, folks. We live in a very dangerous time. I would argue that this era is potentially more dangerous than what we experienced during the Second World War. The greatest generation rose to the challenges created by our enemies back then. As Americans, we today need also to rise to the challenges. We have people who claim to be representing us in the House of Representatives, in the U.S. Senate, in city councils, and state assemblies across the country. Here's where you find out whether or not they really are representing you. And if they aren't, if you've been misled, then boot them out. Boot them out. And don't tell me, oh, this guy is a conservative, he's a good guy. Ted Cruz is supposed to be a conservative who wants to bring in 135,000 computer programmers every year when we're laying off thousands of Americans. Why? Why? This is about cheap labor for Gates and Zuckerberg, people who certainly aren't worried about how they're going to pay for that next hamburger. It's vital that we know the truth. And you know, when you're dealing with most politicians, the truth is about as elusive as it gets. We need, as Americans, to educate ourselves, arm ourselves with the facts, with the objective facts. We need to ask the tough questions. And you know, I was speaking to some folks in one community in New Jersey. And I said, well, you have to go to these town hall meetings. And the guy said, well, my congressman doesn't hold town hall meetings. And I have to tell you, I almost fell out of my chair. Imagine if you work for somebody and your boss says to you, hey, Charlie, we're going to have a meeting tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the morning, so be here early and let's sit down and go over what we're doing. Could you imagine telling your boss, nah, I'm not going to show up? On the other hand, if you own a company, and imagine you told all the people who worked for you, look, we're having a meeting tomorrow. I want you all to be here. Would you allow someone to continue to work for you if they flat out refused to go to a meeting? Of course you wouldn't allow that. You would fire them, and you would be justified. Where in the world do politicians come off having the chutzpah to say, hey, I'm not going to have a town hall meeting. I don't need to have a debate. You know who I am. No, I don't know who you are, pal. Any politician who refuses to participate in town hall meetings with his constituents, and I don't care who he is or she is, needs to be removed. In the private sector or in the government sector, if you were an employee, it's called insubordination. Let's remember who works for whom. They are supposed to work for us, and we are doing a lousy job of supervising our employees. They are our employees. And when we allow them to ride roughshod all over us, shame on us. We face many challenges, but many of these problems are traceable. Not because we let people into the country, but because we're not careful as to who we let into the country. Every house comes with a front door that generally has a doorbell or a door knocker and a peephole or some other device that we could see who's there. Knock-knock jokes are universally accepted around the world because people know that you're supposed to ask for permission before entering into someone's home. When we visit companies, we're given identity tags. You might be given an escort. It's about security and safety, and it makes sense. Why, then, is it too difficult to expect that America will do the same thing with foreign nationals who have no inherent right to be here? This has to change. This has to change. And the only way it's going to change is if we, the people, make it change. That's the whole point to this film, to have people understand exactly what's going on, because when we hear the story about, oh, the border is secure, watch the movie. When your friends tell you, oh, we've heard that the border is under control, watch the movie. See what it looks like when you're really there as they say, live and in person. You know, our borders are our first and last line of defense. Without a secure border, we cannot protect America or Americans. And I would tell you something else. The time has come for Americans to accept another fundamental principle that's consistent with Abraham Lincoln when he talked about a country of the people, by the people, and for the people. For America to do well, Americans must do well. Americans, folks, are not doing well. And we're being told, oh, the recession is over because of how Wall Street is doing. If you think the recession is over, even as average family incomes continue to drop, you're deceiving yourself, and that's a dangerous deception. This has to stop. Only we can make it stop. We have the power of the vote. We have a voice that needs to be heard. And it's not only about voting, and I certainly hope that you will all vote on Election Day this year. But reach out to your elected representatives regularly and routinely. And if they are doing the right thing, then support them and let them know that you support them in those rare cases, because they need to know that there are people who stand with them. But damn it, if they're doing things that are screwing it up for all of us, then you need to let them know, and you need to make certain that they don't stay in office. That's what democracy is about. That's the work Americans must do. This isn't about being left or right, Democrat or Republican. It's about being right or wrong. Neither party is helping us today. There are individual politicians who are. Both parties, I wouldn't give you a plug nickel for either of them. It's all about power and money. And let's be honest, campaign contributions today are little more than legalized bribes. If you get pulled over by a cop and given a ticket for speeding and you offer the cop a $50 bill, there's a good chance you're going to walk away in handcuffs. But if you offer the guy that runs your town $5,000 in the next political campaign, you could probably get the speed limit changed. What's wrong with that picture? Think of how business is done today. We are getting the best government money can buy. And as I pointed out when I spoke at this event for Progressives for Immigration Reform, probably come for a new official cabinet level position, that of auctioneer. Because certainly our government is going to the highest bidder. Our country is going to the highest bidder. So the average American who barely has enough money to scrape by is not in the position to make the contributions. They're going to convince the politicians to give them what they want. But we have something better than the billions of dollars where influence is concerned. It's called our vote, and it's called our telephone. Reach out to these guys and gals that aren't representing you and let them understand who we are and what we will no longer take. My dad gave me some great principles to live by, and one of them, both of my parents did actually, but my dad always used to say to me that I would teach people how they should treat me, pardon me, by demonstrating consistently what I was willing to accept. We shouldn't be accepting this ultimate betrayal by any politician from either political party. Again, folks, please go to those websites I've talked about this afternoon or this evening. Please go to capsweb.org, michaelcutler.net, Front Page Magazine, Progressives for Immigration Reform. The list grows and grows and grows. And certainly, please, folks, Tea Party patriots, the border states of America, promise me, more importantly, promise yourself, this weekend you'll see it. Let me know what you think. You can reach me through michaelcutler.net. We'll call into my program next week. I certainly look forward to hearing from you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Please remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. We'll see you back here, same time, same place, in 2 weeks. Good night, everybody.